Former President Donald Trump walked into the courtroom about 35 minutes ago. It took about 20 minutes to read the charges. And then, for the first time in American history, a former president entered a not guilty plea. That's if you set aside the reckless carriage ride that President Grant took 150 years ago. It is a moment in history. It's a sad moment, I think, for American law. How you process it, especially if you grow up as I did, revering each and every president. They were heroes to me. How will kids in the future look at our presidents? Bring in Todd Flood. Todd, we haven't seen the initial indictment yet. We do know it's 34 counts of first degree falsifying business records and conspiracy for his role in hush money payments to two women. So basically, two transactions in question, 34 counts. To a layman, that may sound a little like piling on.
It sounds like a lot, but, you know, candidly, they just trumped up charges, no pun intended. Not, I shouldn't say it, use that descriptive word, but they used two basic underlying crimes and put in multiple counts to get it up to 34, as opposed to just two counts of, you know, making it up to a felony. This is all about business records and how he reported those business records, and what did he do with the intent of trying to defraud the government. That's the key. And, you know, we're still we want to get into the depths of the discovery, what it is specifically he's alleged to have done. But covering up these records is the key to this whole charge.
We've got the situation where the star witness could be Michael Cohen. It could be Stormy Daniels. I suspect the real star witnesses here are going to be some very mundane documents. But under the conspiracy charge, they must show that he was an active participant in covering it up. Absent Michael Cohen's, and he is a problematic figure, absent his testimony, is it safe to say they've got something in writing there?
You would think, but they may have a financial advisor that testified in front of the grand jury, and it's not in writing. And the grand and that witness says, "Yes, we conspired." It's got to be one other person, you know, that they conspired to do this with, or he did this with, and it could come in the form of testimony. It doesn't need to be in writing. No one's going to write out, "I'm doing this to defraud," right? They'll show the paper trail and the electronic footprint that's there. Mm-hmm. But a lot of it's going to come from testimony and from witnesses about the intent. Because you got to, again, you got to prove this specific intent to commit this crime. No one that's doing the criminal acts is dumb enough to write out and, you know, spell it out, memorialize it. I did this to defraud. Mm-hmm. So that's going to come from testimony, from witnesses up on the stand. And that testimony is going to be challenged.
The former president put this out on Truth Social. Very unfair venue. With some areas that voted 1% Republican, this case should be moved to nearby Staten Island, where we know the president did much better electorally. What will the judge make of that venue, his plea that he can't get a fair trial in this county? Can you use electoral results as evidence of unfairness? Or do you look at it and say, look, if the 9/11 terrorists can get a fair trial in this venue, probably Donald Trump can?
Yeah, you would have to be living not only under a rock, but, you know, tied up in some cement box as well, not to have heard about this case. The question is going to be, again, is can they have to attempt to get a fair and impartial jury. So when you're voir diring and asking questions of jurors specifically, they're going to have to lay aside their biases and prejudice. And that's going to be challenged. It's going to be done in a way where you're going to do everything you possibly can to get a juror to sit in neutral, if you will. But we all come to a jury box. You can't let us, you know, you're not going to have no bias. You're not going to have any thoughts, preconceived or otherwise. But you're going to have to do two things. You're going to have to listen to the facts and evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to have to follow the law. The judge is, I call, the Supreme Court of the law. The jury is the Supreme Court of the facts. So the judge, can you follow the judge if he said X? Can you follow the judge's rule? And if that's the case, then, and you can do it in a fair and impartial way, that's going to get you on the jury. So, no, it's not going to be who voted for who as far as making a determination of whether or not you get a fair and impartial trial. Think about all the cases we've had here in Michigan where it's been publicized from Kwame Kilpatrick, you name it. Right?
John DeLorean, back years.
Right. All of those cases. And we got fair trials. We got fair and impartial trials. So we sat a jury. That's going to be the same situation here. It happens in small towns just like it happens in big towns. This just happens to have national notoriety and the access to the media, access to the social platform on a much wider scale.
Well, and we're all going to sit here in our armchairs and be armchair judges, the same thing that we did in the OJ case, for heaven's sakes. We'll see a motion to dismiss today. We'll see a motion for a change of venue. Historically, traditionally, if those things are turned down, is that evidence of bias on the part of the judge, or is that pretty much what usually happens?
No, it's not evidence of bias on the judge for turning down or rejecting a defendant's motion. That's not the test, the litmus test for whether or not there's bias. That would have nothing to do with it. If you found that the, you know, prosecution or the defense attorneys have significantly weighed in campaign contributions, and or is the golf partner for one of the attorneys, or is someone that is a former partner of some time, you would find conflicts, and that would be waived. But those things have prophylactic measures put in place, and all lawyers and all judges would announce it ahead of time. So they wouldn't be in the position, a curious spot, of having bias or prejudice. That would be noted ahead of time. So, no. And you got to follow the rules of law. I hate the saying, but, you know, the balls and strikes are called by the judge. So in this particular case, the balls and strikes are going to be called by the judge.
Well, the judge may follow him to whatever venue they would change it to anyway, as well as the prosecutor. So, I mean...
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So...
Spot on.
There is this issue of a gag order. We do not yet know. We trust that right now these motions are being made before the judge and he is ruling on them. We may see the prosecution try to silence the former president. There are folks saying, well, you can't do that because he's a presidential candidate. You can't do that because he's a former president. That'd be silencing political speech. Does he have greater or more impressive First Amendment rights than you and I do when it comes down to ensuring that the trial is fair and that jurors are not feeling intimidated or coerced, things like that?
He's a defendant in a case. He has no more rights than anyone other, you know, other defendant in the rights. He's a human being. He has the particular rights of due process and the like. He is, and you could see a litany of things that the judge could do in front of him. The judge could say, I'm admonishing you. I'm giving you this warning ahead of time that if you speak of threats or you speak of anything towards this case, you're going to be sanctioned or censured, or, you know, a gag order will be put in place or held in contempt.
Or it's predict death and destruction. Yeah. Real quick question. He is going to speak tonight, presumably around 8 o'clock when he gets back to Mar-a-Lago. If you are advising him as his defense attorney, what are you telling him about guardrails?
You know, I'm telling all my clients to shut up, that they don't speak to the media about this particular case, the case that they're in front of. Everything you say can and will be used against you. So first and foremost, let the process work. Now, is Trump going to listen to anybody? I doubt it, right? That doesn't seem to work in the past, hasn't worked in the past. So he'll have his own mind, and that'll take at his own peril. But you advise your clients not to talk. And attorneys, they can't talk about their case that's anything inside the spectrum of of inside baseball.
Right.
They are governed by the rules of ethics. So they're limited on what they can speak. And that's both for the prosecution and the defense.
Good enough. Todd, we await the details, and we'll nitpick through them when we get them, all right?
Thanks, my friend. Be well.
All right. Todd Flood, attorney and managing partner at Flood Law. When we come back, one of the biggest opinion makers in town is saying, you know what? The governor of New York should pardon Donald Trump, not because he's innocent, because of what this could do to the country. We'll find out if you agree next on The Guy Gordon Show.